I'm David Schreiner-Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Mary Ann Snow. Mary Ann is the CEO and founder of Sophia, a virtual company that designs, builds, and delivers custom soft skill training for organizations with remote teams and dispersed workers. A former corporate executive who jumped ship in 2009, Mary Ann successfully transformed a recession severance package into an entrepreneurial opportunity. As head of a fast-growing woman-owned business, Mary Ann has learned the art of managing her minutes and the importance of work-life integration for maximum return on investment. Mary Ann, welcome to the show.
So nice to be here, David. Thanks so much for talking to me.
My pleasure. It's great to have you on. So I would imagine that making the kind of transition that you made was not necessarily so simple. What prompted you to pursue entrepreneurship and leave the corporate world?
To be very honest, life gave me that choice based on the fact that in 2009, I was working for a financial service company, and in my role at that financial service company, I was impacted by the recession, and I was faced with choices that were not very desirable. And so the one choice that I absolutely felt comfortable with was taking a package and leaving a corporate environment at that particular time. Even though I realized that there were going to be challenges, I, to be honest with you, I don't think I realized just how many challenges there were going to be at that time, but it positioned me. So I started to think about my life differently, my professional path differently. And I started my entrepreneurial journey at the height of the recession in 2009. So honestly, it took a while to develop myself as an entrepreneur. There was a pretty steep learning curve because I had really created my identity as an internal executive within an organization, but I had to build from ground zero. And even though I was new to startups and the economy was pretty bad at that point in time, I was very motivated. My primary goals at that point were really to make a living for myself, to be able to support myself. And once I had a very stable revenue stream, then I could afford to think about what I wanted to do as an entrepreneur. But it was definitely motivated by something that was completely out of my control.
You said something really interesting, Mary Ann, which is you described your own definition of yourself as being really tied to the kind of work that you did and also the environment in which you worked.
Yeah, I had spent my entire professional life working inside of corporations, and I hadn't envisioned myself as an entrepreneur. And yet, you know, given the choice, and at the time, the choices that I had available to me were taking positions that would set me back in my career that didn't feel very forward thinking, and I was have always been a person who's been very jazzed with learning and pushing myself and taking some risks, and I worked in high change environments, and so it was really important to me to not take that step back.
What did people around you say to you when you told them that you were planning to open your own business at the height of the recession?
Well, I think I was surrounded by a lot of like-minded people who were struggling with what was happening in the economy at the time. And so it was really interesting, David, because at that particular point in history, very smart people were being forced to pivot. And so it turned out to be an unbelievable opportunity to break down a lot of just sort of natural barriers that exist between industry experts, between people of different levels of management, of executive backgrounds. And so people would take your phone calls that under normal circumstances, when an economy is really on the rise, they wouldn't have the bandwidth to do that. So it was a really interesting dynamic. But at the same time, I can tell you that all of my, you know, friends, my family, the people who had always seen me in one role were terrified.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really common reaction that the people that are closest to us have when we're making a pivot. Even though we may feel like the pivot is the right direction, there's an awful lot of advice that seems to come from people who we know, like, and trust that seems to try to counteract what our plans are.
Well, it was really interesting for me, too, because my husband, you know, we have a mortgage. And so, I mean, there was the practical aspects of how are you going to earn a living and contribute to your household? And yet very early in my married life, my husband had done something quite similar where he was working in an industry he didn't like, with a job he didn't like, and frankly he was coming home pretty discouraged and a little depressed, and we talked about it, and he made that pivot very early on, and I supported him with that, and it turned out to be such a great choice, and I think that was really helpful for us because as a couple we had actually seen it happen. Now we were a lot younger at the time, so our risk tolerance was pretty high, but at the same time, I think that we had a lot of confidence in each other as professionals with track records and that really understood our stuff. And we also felt it was really important to support each other.
Right. So having a spouse or someone close to us who can be supportive of the mindset that is fueling our pivot is really important.
And I think that, you know, there were certain family members and friends in the circle that I made conscious choices to just distance myself from for a period of time because their anxiety and their concerns. I needed to have good, powerful, very positive energy around me at that particular point in time because it was a big shift for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really an astute comment that you intentionally kept some space from people that may have imparted some negative energy towards you at a time when you didn't need it.
Yeah, and I think there was just conscious choices made to create some boundary space that allowed me an opportunity to really create a new identity because that's what it felt like. I really felt, it's the quintessential butterfly in a chrysalis, right? Where it's like suddenly you are coming out and there's a certain vulnerability there. So I would say to anybody who's thinking about making that shift is really create as much of a positive space around yourself as possible so that you can live through the ups and downs that are inevitable as you transition like that.
Yeah, that's great advice. So Marianne, once you decided what path you wanted to take and you wanted to pursue something entrepreneurial, how did you unearth where the best opportunity was?
Well, I think you can put my transition into a couple of phases. The initial phase, just because of the timing and the economy, had to do with what could I get paid for initially. And there was a point in time when I was first starting up the business and working more as a solo consultant that some of my core strengths, that whole issue of professional development training, was not sellable because of the fact that at that particular point, the economy wasn't supporting it. Businesses were not thinking about training professionals. So I had to go into my skill set and say, what else do I have in my toolbox that people will pay for? And I was very fortunate because of having a background in digital strategy and having spent a lot of time thinking about how do you communicate to people, one person, how do they communicate to many people enabled by technology. And that was something that people had an interest in. So that's how I got myself paid. Once I could support myself, then I had an opportunity to think more broadly about, as the economy recovers, what's my passion and what do I want to do in the future?
And so then what was the next pivot that you made?
Well, the next pivot had to do with the fact that businesses were starting to recover. There was a big shift in corporations in general, where many of them had really downsized their professional development teams during the recession. And when the need for professional training came up, it came back with a vengeance. And so because of the networking connections and the portfolio of business that I had collected during my time talking about strategy and business operations, the more I kept in touch with my clients, the more they talked to me about pain points, the more I could make suggestions. And I really moved whatever opportunities I had, whether it was a speaking engagement, whether it was writing an article or doing things like this, connecting with people like yourself who are very committed to educating your community on resources that they can leverage. And I took that and parlayed that into Sophia, which is the professional development training company that we've been working on today.
So let's talk a little bit about the details of Sophia. What is it that you offer?
So Sophia, there are a lot of training companies in the world, and it was really important to me that we look at things in relation to what's happening in business today, because the economy shifted, the workforce has shifted, and we all know, whether we're talking about millennials or whether we're talking about companies that are matrix, they have tighter teams, smaller teams doing more with less, that today's work environment is pretty complex and also it's dispersed. So it's more usual for people to work from home. We have a gig economy. We have 1099ers, you know, consultants, solopreneurs, people like myself who were white collar executives or middle management or senior in our fields who got transitioned during the recession. And now we just do business differently. And so I wanted to build professional development solutions that were relevant to what's happening today in the marketplace, because primarily I'm a business person and it relevance, practicality, something that's applicable, something that will tie to ROI is very important to me. And then you have the second piece, which is I thought it was a really unique market niche, because while there are lots of training companies in the world, there are no training companies that we've been able to find that specifically focus on people who work in a remote work situation, who either work at virtual companies or they have to work towards some sort of business objective through a dispersed team that's not co-located in the same place. They do a lot of their stuff enabled by technology. And while there's lots of people talking about the technology tools and lots of people who are talking about, you know, let's talk about all the fun new devices and software and platforms, there are very few people who are talking about the users, the people who have to live in those environments, who have to figure out how to manage relationships and build trust and manage conflict and get work done with people that can't physically see.
Yeah, I'm surprised that, there isn't more activity in the area you just described, because it's a rapidly growing method for people to work.
It's a really rapidly growing method for people to work. And it's actually interesting because we've obviously done a lot of education in this segment, because even people who work in corporations are not recognizing the fact that the skill sets that are required to create productive collaboration in these environments are quite different than if you have line of sight with someone, you know, getting up and walking over and being able to have some sort of a conversation with them. And I think that, you know, sometimes traditional business people say, well, you know, we don't allow people to work out of the office. And so the conversation is very typically, do you engage in any sort of audio conference calling? Do you engage in any sort of video conference calling? And when they're saying yes, it gives us an opportunity to say, you know, what are the challenges or the pain points that you're experiencing in that particular type of work environment? Because when you have to get work done with people who you're not co-located with, then the dynamic changes. There are just shifts that have to be made from a skill set to, you know, from a business skill perspective that will get you a better outcome.
Right. So so that being said, Marianne, what are some of the benefits that users of your system are able to take advantage of?
Well, first and foremost, rather than find out the hard way, and very often when people are new hires or teams of people are coming together to solve complex problems, and they're doing that with dispersed teams that don't have that line of sight, there is a different process that happens from a team building perspective, as well as from a relationship building, trust building perspective. Our systems are designed to cut right to the chase and to talk frankly about the differences in terms of team dynamics, but also in terms of techniques and approaches that can be used in those situations, so that we can get a team to productivity more quickly. We can help a company with dispersed teams spread their culture and maintain their culture over distance, even though people don't sit in the same office location. We help our leaders, managers, who suddenly find themselves having to manage people at a distance, to think about how they build team cohesion, engagement, camaraderie, but also a free flow of information so that there's good trust back and forth. So it's really about team dynamics, but it's team dynamics in a 21st century environment where very often the interface of a team's interaction is some sort of technology device.
Now, does it make a difference whether the team is a team of people who are formal employees, or could the team be a solopreneur consultant and maybe some other consultants and a corporate client?
I think it has to do with the individual perspective, David, because if you have individuals who understand the dynamics of this particular environment and are willing to accept that you can't use older, more legacy approaches to team building or team interaction in these environments. And it's applicable across the board, whether we're talking about solopreneurs, whether we're talking about highly complex teams made up of a lot of subject matter experts, whether you have a hybrid model with internal employees as well as external experts or consultants who happen to be working with the group. If you've got a team of people who understand the environmental factors that are going to impact how you deal with each other, I've had very productive experiences with people, like, for example, people like yourself, where from a strategy point of view, if you and I are working together while we each have our individual business, it's actually kind of an interesting dynamic, because when solopreneurs work with solopreneurs, you have people who are both owners working together. And so the high level of commitment to outcomes, managing to deadlines, being very conscious of the responsibility that you have to your teammates and the people that you're working with. It's actually kind of fun, because if you have an owner working with an owner, everybody has skin in the game, and that makes a big difference. If you're working with a corporate team and you happen to be the solopreneur who's working with that corporate team, the more that you can integrate yourself into the system and sound like that corporate culture, the more you can present yourself like that corporate culture, the more you can insert yourself into that corporate culture, the more successful you can be, whether you happen to be in the room or whether you happen to be working virtually.
That sounds great. And Marianne, it sounds like you have really created significant success in the niche that you've pursued. How did you learn the business strategy that helped you smash the plateau? And it sounds like you've smashed plateaus repeatedly since 2009. How did you learn that business strategy?
I asked a lot of questions. I was very clear when I left corporate America in 2009 that there were a whole bunch of things I didn't know. And so I think that the first bit of advice that I would give anybody who's deciding to make this step is be humble. You've got to go out and you have to seek out sources with people who are doing things that you think are interesting in the space, and be persistent, but be thoughtful and strategic about reaching out to those individuals and having conversations with those individuals so that you can learn from them what worked and what didn't work. The other thing is, from a broad-based perspective, I read things, I went to events. I was very, very fortunate, you know, as much as it was a challenge during that particular economic time. People were focused on small business accelerators. They were focused on different type of networking events. And I think the whole landscape around networking events really changed dramatically during that time period. People were just more open to having conversations in untraditional ways. And so strategic networking, where you are making a choice to get yourself out there and not only explore different ideas, have different conversations, try different stuff. So there was a little bit of a learning curve for me. When I did approach people, and I think this is particularly important in today's market where the economy has shifted and people have less time, is making sure that you do the bulk of the work. So when you have a conversation with someone who has information that you would like to learn, is going into that conversation as respectful as possible. You do the heavy lifting. You make it easy for them to give you their experience, information, and their kind of, you know, mental process and how they do stuff. You're the one who really should be prepared for those conversations and make sure that when you're going through that process, that you're showing gratitude, you're offering reciprocity, and really presenting yourself as somebody who could be a good value partner, even if it's not right then, but could be a good value partner in the future.
That's great advice. Marianne, whom do you know personally who's done a remarkable job at smashing plateaus?
I have a really dear friend who's become a dear friend over my entrepreneurial journey, and his name is Soren Ryder. He has a company called Working Planet that happens to be based here in Providence, Rhode Island. He was a former NASA engineer, literally a rocket scientist, and his wife, who is his business partner, is a mathematician. They have a search engine marketing firm that really focuses on search analytics from a mathematical point of view. He has been an invaluable friend, mentor, resource, value partner, everything you could possibly name, and he's a role model for me in terms of how I want to be in the future.
Sounds like a great example. So thanks for sharing that. Marianne, what can we look forward to in the near future from you? What's coming up?
We have a new product launch in the works right now. During our years as remote work professionals, ironically, we've identified even though our current work is much more B2B, we've identified a B2C opportunity, a product need for our niche market, and we plan to fill it with a line of retail products specifically designed for remote professionals who work from home or co-work spaces or temporary offices. And we're calling the product line the Remote Nation line, and it's our goal to build products that serve the needs of remote work community worldwide.
Sounds great. How can listeners learn more about you and follow you and learn what's coming up, particularly when this product is launched?
Our core website, which is www.sophia.com, not only has all, we like to share information with people. We think that this is a great way to work. We think it's a great lifestyle choice. And so not only will this give you tips on how do you work remotely, some of the lessons that we've learned, but we're keeping our community updated on everything that's happening with Remote Nation. So come and visit us. If you have questions, we have a feature called Ask Sophia, and it's the Dear Abby of remote work. So come and find us and ask us questions, because we can't wait to hear from you.
Sounds great. Well, Marianne, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a fascinating discussion about how you launched your entrepreneurial journey, the various pivots that you made, and how you now serve people who are, in particular, people who are dispersed in the way they work. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Marianne Snow, the CEO and founder of Sophia. Thank you again, Marianne, for joining us.
So it's been a pleasure, David. Thank you.